So I'll begin my talk on choroid plexus in adult neurogenesis. So I have the advantage of going last. And so my introduction was given by Fiona and by Olivier this morning on subventricular zone adult neurogenesis. And Fiona gave a good introduction on the choroid plexus. So I'm going to just talk very briefly, introduce very briefly the choroid plexus. So it's a small structure within the ventricles of the brain. So this is the human brain. There's two lateral ventricles, a third medial ventricle, and a fourth posterior ventricle. And so the one of the roles of the choroid plexus, it's a highly there's a lot of blood vessels, and it's fenestrated. There's fenestrated blood vessels that that pass molecules from the blood into the cerebral spinal fluid, or the CSF. And the choroid plexus provides a mechanical barrier that forms a blood-CSF barrier. And so there's tight junctions that prevent molecules from passing. And it's highly... There's a lot of microvilli for a large exchange surface with the cerebral spinal fluid. So there's not only a mechanical barrier, but there's also a biochemical barrier. It's such that molecules are are pumped out from the blood back into the blood through the choroid plexus. And there's also a removal of toxins from the cerebral spinal fluid through the choroid plexus. The choroid plexus provides immune surveillance. There are immune cells within the stroma of the choroid plexus that can monitor the cerebral spinal fluid. And there's also immune cells that come from the blood and pass through into the cerebral spinal fluid as well, mediated by the choroid plexus. The choroid plexus makes a lot of cerebral spinal fluid. It's one of the main sources of cerebral spinal fluid. It's mostly water, 99% water. However, there are proteins that perform homeostatic functions in the brain, such as solute carriers and trophic factors, and also nutrients that are delivered throughout the brain. And cerebral spinal fluid is constantly produced throughout the day, providing a flow of fluid that helps clear toxins and metabolites from the brain. So this is the mouse, which you've seen before, with the lateral ventricles and the third ventricle. So there's been a lot of work done on factors secreted by the choroid plexus and their potential for adult neurogenesis. So this is the only picture I'll show of the cerebral of the ventricular subventricular zone for adult neurogenesis. So this is the pinwheel structure of epidermal cells that contact the cerebral spinal fluid, with the quiescent B cell that also contacts the cerebral spinal fluid with the cilia. And gives rise eventually to neuroblasts. And so it's been shown that slit 2, along with the flow of cerebral spinal fluid, can guide these neuroblasts along the ventricular wall towards the rostral migratory stream. Interleukin 1 beta, as well as neurotrophin 3, have been shown to perform functions on the quiescent B cells in supporting the niche environment and their quiescence. It's also been shown that type 1 interferon in the CSF can have functions on the subgranular zone. Now, I should mention that a lot of this evidence it's not circumstantial, but in fact, these studies, they show that these factors are pretty well. In fact, neurotrophin 3 is passed from the bloodstream through the choroid plexus into the CSF. However, so all of these factors are produced by the choroid plexus, and these experiments were done by infusing these molecules in the brain into the ventricles, but the evidence doesn't clearly show that these are coming from the choroid plexus and affecting these regions, because in fact, these molecules are also expressed by epidermal cells or by local cells in the niche. And so we became interested in the choroid plexus from our work with the OTX2 homeoprotein in a project involving looking at cortical plasticity in the visual cortex. And so, in fact, we found that OTX2, or confirmed that OTX2, is highly expressed in all choroid plexus here in the ventricle, lateral ventricle, and as well as in the fourth ventricle. And using biotinylated surface experiments, we found that OTX2 is on the surface of the choroid plexus. So track B, the receptor track B, is on the surface. And here's a row A control, intracellular control, not being biotinylated. And we also found OTX2 in the cerebrospinal fluid. So TTR is secreted by the choroid plexus. Track B is not. And we find OTX2 to be secreted as TTR. And so to gain a better insight into the manipulate OTX2 directly in the choroid plexus, we developed a technique using OTX2 flox mice and injection of a Cre recombinase coupled to a cell-penetrating peptide. And using this paradigm, we were able to specifically recombine only in the choroid plexus. So this is ROSA mice, and with beta-gal staining, we see that there's very few, almost no cells recombined in the parenchyme and only in the choroid plexus. So with this OTX2 flox mouse, we're able to decrease by 80% the expression of OTX2. And in our choroid plexus, our visual cortex critical period paradigm, we showed that reducing OTX2 in the choroid plexus resulted in about a 20% decrease in the amount of OTX2 protein accumulating in cells within the visual cortex, so far away in the parenchyme. And this resulted in a physiological change. We were able to rescue the visual acuity of mice that were previously rendered amblyopic. And so this is our model. We have the choroid plexus producing OTX2, secreting it into the cerebrospinal fluid, which then travels into the parenchyme and can influence the function of, in this case, the visual cortex. So the protein is actually accumulating specifically in a subset of interneurons within the visual cortex to affect their function. So this property of OTX2 to transfer between cells is, in fact, work done in the Prochain lab showing that homeoproteins, and this was discovered several decades ago, can transfer between cells. So it's a class of about 200 proteins identified by their homeodomain transcription factor. It's highly conserved, and within this homeodomain, there are conserved sequences for their secretion and conserved sequences for their internalization in neighboring target cells. And homeoproteins can gain access directly to the nucleus to regulate transcription or the cytoplasm to regulate translation, and they can also perform signaling functions on target cells. And so in this context, the fact that OTX2 is being expressed by a central source, the choroid plexus, and being perhaps gaining access to the entire brain, we performed serial immunohistochemistry and indeed confirmed that OTX2 is also accumulating in other brain regions in the cortex, as well as in the hippocampus and in the subventricular zone. We also wondered whether other homeoproteins or interesting factors being potentially secreted by the choroid plexus, so we performed a deep sequencing analysis. So it's based on these observations that I'm going to talk to you today about two projects. So the first is to answer the question whether OTX2 coming directly from the choroid plexus can regulate adult neurogenesis. And the second will be one of the molecules that proteins we found highly expressed was in fact amyloid precursor protein. So the second project will be to look at whether APP can influence the niches and perhaps impact amyloid diseases, and this the APP coming directly from the choroid plexus. So for the OTX2 project, we jumped right in and used our OTX2 flox model to knock down OTX2 in the choroid plexus and to see if this affects neurogenesis. So we're taking three-month-old mice, injecting TAT Cre intracerebral ventricularly, waiting about 2 weeks and performing serial BRDU, and then, waiting another 3 weeks so that the labeled neurons here have time to migrate into the olfactory bulb and integrate. So with BRDU staining, we found that indeed there was a 20% decrease in the amount of newborn neurons in the olfactory bulb. And here specifically in the granular cell layer. So this can either be due to defects in proliferation or migration. So we checked to see if there were any changes in proliferation with this paradigm. So here, after the two-week Cre TAT injection, we do BRDU labeling and look in the cerebral subventricular zone. And in fact, we found no change. and to see if there's perhaps changes in migration. We looked 2 weeks after BRDU injection and in the RMS, and found that indeed there is a drop in the amount of neurons there. We also looked to see if there was any change, if neuroblasts were migrating out or of the RMS, so being mistargeted, and we didn't see any of that. So it looks like OTX2 is perhaps regulating migration, fate, or cell death within the subventricular zone. However, there's something that's a little that's complicating this interpretation, is that by knocking down OTX2 in the choroid plexus, we could be having two effects. So one is either by knocking down OTX2, we're reducing the amount of OTX2 in the cerebrospinal fluid, and therefore it could be directly regulating the neurogenic niche from OTX2, or by knocking it down the choroid plexus, we could have an indirect effect through OTX2 regulating factors, other factors being secreted by the cerebrospinal fluid, or by the choroid plexus. So to look at that, we did RNA sequencing analysis of the choroid plexus in the knockdown paradigm, and indeed we actually found a few growth factors are changed. So IGF-2, we have a twofold decrease. We also have some Wnt signaling and other neurotrophic factors that are changing. There's quite a lot of morphogens that are produced by the choroid plexus, and so most of them are not modified, trophic factors and migration factors. But clearly, this leads to some difficult interpretation. So we decided to focus on the direct action of OTX2 in the cerebrospinal fluid. So for this, we turned to a non-cell autonomous mouse model. And this model was based on single-chain antibodies that are encoded by minigenes. So we subclone the variable light and heavy chain of the antibody and fuse it to a signal sequence so that is secreted. And in this way, homeoproteins are, or your target protein is sequestered in the extracellular matrix or and prevented from entering its target cell, thus keeping intact the cell autonomous properties of the homeoprotein. And so we took these single chain antibodies for OTX2, fused it to a signal peptide and a tag, as well as a GFP marker, and cloned it behind a stop-locks cassette, so that allows Cre-inducible expression of the single-chain antibody. And so the model is here. In fact, so we will be expressing the single-chain antibody in the choroid plexus, so that it's secreted in the cerebrospinal fluid, and therefore capture OTX2 outside. And in fact, these single-chain antibodies are not active within the cell, so do not block OTX2 within the choroid plexus. And so when we've validated this mouse model now using our critical period cortical plasticity model. So when we express the single chain antibody in the CSF, we again see a 20% decrease of OTX2 in the visual cortex. And this resulted in a massive expression of plasticity genes and also functional plasticity, which I'm not showing the data here. So when we use this mouse model, in our adult neurogenesis paradigm with 2 weeks BRDU injections after 2 weeks of knockdown and 3 weeks after sacrifice to look into the olfactory bulb, we actually found a 25% decrease now in newborn neurons within the olfactory bulb. So clearly OTX2 is providing a direct non-cell autonomous regulation of the subventricular zone neurogenesis. And to confirm that this is indeed non-cell autonomous, we confirm that the protein of OTX2 is present and not the message. So for this, we perform biochemical analysis, immunoprecipitating extracts of subventricular zone and RMS and striatum, and then we see the protein here, and this is a superior curiculus positive control. Genetically, we have OTX2 mice that express OTX2 GFP in the locus. We do not detect GFP at all in subventricular zone RMS, and here's the choroid plexus for positive control. And we also perform in situs, showing that the message is absent from SVZ and it's present in the septum, which is a positive control. So looking at the distribution of OTX2 protein in these niches, We find that it's within scattered within the subventricular zone here and when panels 1, 2, and 3, as well as within the RMS in panels 4, 5, and 6. And so when we look to see what cells are taking up OTX2, we find in fact that it's going into the ependymal cells within the ventricular zone, labeled by vimentin, and it's also getting into GFAP cells a little deeper. Or it's not at all colocalized with double cortin, which labels neuroblasts, and we also did not find it in nestin-positive cells, in microglia, or in oligodendrocytes. So it suggests that it's getting either into the quiescent B cells or supporting astrocytes. And when we looked in the RMS, again, we did not find it colocalizing with double cortin, which labels the migrating neuroblasts, but instead within GFAP positive cells. So this is an electron micrograph showing kind of the organization of the rostral migratory stream. In blue are the supporting GFAP cells that surround the migrating neuroblasts in red. So again, it seems like in the RMS, OTX2 is getting into the supporting cells. So to begin getting an idea of what OTX2 could be doing in these supporting cells, we were inspired by our work done in the visual cortex plasticity paradigm, where in fact we saw that when OTX2 was being internalized into these parvalbumin interneurons, it was actually promoting the assembly of the perineuronal nets in the extracellular matrix, shown here. So this sort of feedback loop. And other people have shown that OTX2 can regulate the expression of thrombosplenin 4, NCAM, tenascin C, and other proteoglycans that are expressed within the neurogenic niches. And a recent paper has shown, in fact, that thrombosplenin is expressed specifically in astrocytes within the SVZ and RMS, and that's shown here. And so by qPCR analysis using our OTX2 flox paradigm, we found that removal of OTX2 results in the increased expression of thrombosplenin 4 and tenascin C within the SVZ. So to summarize this part of the talk, we've shown that OTX2 expression knockdown reduces olfactory bulb newborn neurons, and that this is due in part to non-cell autonomous regulation of the subventricular zone, in the subventricular zone and RMS by OTX2 from the cerebrospinal fluid. It's localized in the supporting cells within SVZ and RMS, and that conditional knockout of OTX2 seems to be changing extracellular matrix derived by astrocytes. So now I'll get to the second part of my talk, which is to look at APP coming from the cortical plexus and to see whether it can influence neurogenic niches. So the data that got us onto this project is this. So APP is actually the 11th most expressed protein message within the cortical plexus. And by qPCR, we find that its expression compared to the parenchyme, so here in black, it's twofold more expressed compared to, for example, cortex or hippocampus or subventricular zone. And we looked and we found that all the secretases are expressed within the cortical plexus, meaning that it can be it can form all its metabolites. So that's summarized here. APP is a membrane-bound protein that is implicated in cell adhesion, or it can be processed within two different pathways. One is amyloidogenic, and the other non-amyloidogenic. So the amyloidogenic pathway involves processing by the beta secretase complex, which releases a soluble APP beta protein into the extracellular matrix. And then gamma secretase further cleaves this to provide the A-beta peptide, which has been shown to regulate synaptic plasticity. It is also this peptide that forms oligomers and eventually participates in the formation of the amyloid plaques. The alpha secretase processes APP down the non-amyloidogenic path, giving rise to soluble APP alpha protein, and gamma secretase again cleaves it, providing an intracellular domain that can regulate transcription. So APP has been studied by numerous labs for its potential role in neurogenesis, and so there's quite a bit of data, and For example, the intercellular domain has been shown to decrease proliferation, have a role in migration, and also have a role in apoptosis. And in fact, several years ago, Isabelle Caillé and Alain Prochian have shown that APP, SAPP, can in fact regulate proliferation within the subventricular zone. So they show that if you infuse SAPP in the CSF, you can increase proliferation. So SAPP was found to be localized with neuroblasts, the PSA and CAM cells, and as well as the progenitor cells labeled by EGFR. So they were able to increase adult neurogenesis by infusing SAPP. A local knockdown was also rescued by an infusion of SAPP. And by blocking APP in the cerebrospinal fluid using blocking antibodies in a regeneration paradigm with RAC, these antibodies delayed the rescue of subventricularism. So this led to us to ask these questions. Is it that in this context, is it APP coming from the choroid plexus that is influencing these neurogenic niches? Is it influencing only the SVZ but also the hippocampus? And is it possible that APP coming from the choroid plexus can participate in neurodegenerative diseases by forming amyloid plaques? So for this, we used several knockout models and gain-of-function models. So one knockout model is using the APP flux in the intracerebral ventricular injection of TATCRE, which we used with OTX2. And here we found, with this paradigm, we found a 50% decrease in the amount of APP being produced by the choroid plexus. And this resulted in a decrease in Ki67 positive cells within the SVZ. We did not see any change in the hippocampus with this paradigm. What's interesting is we were able to replicate the experiment done by Isabelle, and that infusion of SCPP can rescue CRETAT. And then we also expressed a silencing RNA for SAPP within the choroid plexus. So this is another paradigm of knockdown. And here we are actually able to attain 80% decrease in the amount of APP being expressed by the choroid plexus. And so here we targeted directly the choroid plexus. We did not change APP expression in the parenchyme. And here we were able to see about a 40% decrease in amount of proliferation as measured by K67 positive cells in the SVZ. And we are also able to see a change in proliferation within the hippocampus. So it suggests that to affect hippocampus, we need stronger decrease of OTX2 in the CSF. So for gain-of-function approaches, we infused the protein again in the CSF, so to recapitulate what was done a few years ago. But now we also look to see whether we could influence neurogenesis within the hippocampus, and this is indeed the case. As a control, we infused the SAPP beta protein, and this did not change proliferation within the two zones. And to confirm that APP is coming from the choroid plexus, we overexpressed the protein within the choroid plexus. So over twofold increase in expression of protein resulted in a mild but significant increase in proliferation in both SVZ and hippocampus. So this is exciting. It's showing that APP coming from choroid plexus can be involved in regulating neurogenesis. And so we were wondering if APP coming from choroid plexus can also be participating in disease states. And so for this, we expressed the human APP with the Swedish and Indiana mutations delivered by AAV vector at 3 months, and then sacrificed the mice 3 months later. And with this paradigm, we were able to indeed form plaques within the cortex and hippocampus. And we also affected neurogenesis within both these regions. So I think this is pretty strong evidence that APP coming from the choroid plexus can form plaques, And it's been known that in mouse models for APP, mutated APP expression, there's changes in proliferation. And so we then thought that maybe targeting APP can provide therapeutic avenues for rescuing amyloid diseases. And so to look at this, we turn to the APP-PS1 mouse model. And this mouse model expresses mutated versions of APP and PS1 throughout the brain. We characterize these mice and confirm that indeed they form plaques by 4.5 months, and they increase in number by 1 year of age, and they also increase in size throughout their life. So this data has already been shown by other labs that you get a decrease in proliferation within the hippocampus in this mouse model. And we now show that we also see a decrease in proliferation within the subventricular zone. So the rescue experiment here is then to decrease the expression of the mutated form of APP and PS1 only within the choroid plexus. And so we went for broke with this experiment. We looked at late stage mice, so at the age of 14 months. They already have many plaques and decreased neurogenesis at this stage. So we expressed a silencing RNA to repress the expression of APP and waited 4 months. And so we see a strong decrease in APP-PS1 expression without at all affecting the amount of expression of endogenous APP. And unfortunately, in this paradigm, we did not see any change in proliferation. This is perhaps not surprising, considering that the wild-type mice already are very low in proliferation in both SVZ and SGZ at 18 months of age. And then we looked to see whether we are changing any pattern of amyloid plaque accumulation within these mice. So ThiOS labels the amyloid plaques in the wild-type mice at 18 months, shows no plaques at all. These APP-PS1 are riddled with plaques, and so this is shown here. With the knockdown, we do not see any change in the number of plaques or in the size of plaques in these mice. So this experiment is now a control experiment, and we're going to repeat it with mice that are in early stage, so at 4 months. So to summarize this part of the talk, the choroid plexus APP, when knocked down, can reduce subgranular zone, subventricular zone proliferation, whereas gain-of-function experiments are able to increase proliferation. Furthermore, choroid plexus expression of mutated versions of APP can induce plaque formation and alter autoneurogenesis, suggesting these could be models for Alzheimer's disease or for amyloid plaque formation. And we're now trying stronger and longer expression of this mutated protein, and also planning on doing behavior experiments with this paradigm. We weren't able to rescue amyloid plaque formation by expressing the transgene that knocks down APP in the choroid plexus, so other experiments are underway. So these experiments with OTX2 and APP show that the choroid plexus is able to alter mouse physiology and neurogenesis. And I think it's an interesting organ for therapeutic potential. And so all these experiments were done by stereotaxic injection of molecules with this unit in the CSF, which is perhaps not the best way to approach therapy. So we've done proof of principle experiments by delivering molecules into the blood system. So the blood has direct access to the choroid plexus. So for this, we, behind the eye, did retroorbital sinus injection of morpholinos against OTX2 and showed that we are able to target specifically the choroid plexus, knock down OTX2 protein specifically in the plexus and not in the retina. So this method can be used to knock down other genes in the choroid plexus. This is a temporary knockdown, and we need to also work on some permanent knockdown experiments or gain of function experiments. So in conclusion, the choroid plexus secretes unexpected factors that signal throughout the brain. OTX2 can influence subventricular neurogenesis and regulation of supporting niche cells. The SAPP secreted by the choroid plexus can affect the influence the proliferation of both subventricular zone and subglenular zone, and mutated EPP from the choroid plexus can participate in amyloid plaque formation. And again, just to repeat that with these experiments were possible by having tools that directly target choroid plexus for knockdown and gain of function. So I'd like to thank our funding sources, institutional and regional, as well as national, European, and private. And of course, I'd like to thank the Alain Prochian's lab, especially Annabelle Planck, who did the work on the OTX2 neurogenesis story with the help of Chantal Le Poupon, and Karen Arnault, who was responsible for the work on APP. Thank you.